on chapter 10, text number 16 and 17. So we have 16 written here on the board, and we'll chant it. Vaktum arhasya sheshena divya hi atma vibhutayah yabhir vibhuti bhir lokan imam stvam vyapyatishthasi. There's also text number 17. We don't have it written on the board, so I'll just sing it myself. Katham vidyamaham yogim stvam sada parichintayan keshu keshu cha bhaveshu chintyosi bhagavan maya. The word to word for that is katham, how vidyamaham shall I know, yogin, O supreme mystic, tvam, you, sada, always, parichintayan, thinking of, keshu, in which, cha, also, bhaveshu, natures, chintaya, asi, you are to be remembered, bhagavan, O supreme, maya, by me. Translation of the 16th verse. Please tell me in detail of your divine opulences by which you pervade all these worlds. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In this verse, it appears that Arjuna is already satisfied with his understanding of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. By Krishna's grace, Arjuna has personal experience, intelligence, and knowledge, and whatever else a person may have through all these agencies. And he has understood Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For him, there is no doubt. Yet, he is asking Krishna to explain his all-pervading nature. People in general, and the impersonalists in particular, concern themselves mainly with the all-pervading nature of the Supreme. So Arjuna is asking Krishna how he exists in his all-pervading aspect through his different energies. One should know that this is being asked by Arjuna on behalf of the common people. Text number 17, translation. O Krishna, O Supreme Mystic, how shall I constantly think of you? And how shall I know you? In what various forms are you to be remembered, O Supreme Personality of Godhead? In the purport, it's a long purport, I just try to summarize. First, Prabhupada says that as per Krishna's own words, Krishna is not revealed. Krishna chooses to hide himself from non-devotees, people who don't believe in him. Yoga maya samavrita naham prakasham sarvasya yoga maya samavrita. He says that I am covered by my yoga maya potency. Then he says that Arjuna here is asking for the benefit of the other people, for the common masses. So devotees can know Krishna, but what about others? They don't know who is Krishna. They don't know about his different energies, about how great he is. So for their benefit today, in these two verses, Arjuna is requesting him, please tell me in different ways, how shall I remember you? Keshu keshu cha bhaveshu. And keshu keshu cha bhaveshu, our acharyas explain. The words keshu keshu cha bhaveshu refer to material nature. The word bhava means physical things. Because the materialists cannot understand Krishna spiritually, they are advised to concentrate the mind on physical things and try to see how Krishna is manifested by physical representations. So this is the question that Arjuna has for Krishna today. So today in this verse, in addition to the different things that Arjuna has exposed himself, Arjuna has shown honest inquiry. Arjuna in the first chapter, when he gives different reasons to Krishna for not fighting, he has shown in one sense his illusion also. Krishna put him under illusion for our benefit, so that we can benefit by the answers that Arjuna receives from Krishna. So he has shown different facets throughout the Gita. Sometimes he catches on to certain words that Krishna speaks. Krishna explains something. Says, oh, you explained like this, but how do I understand it like that? So he shows his alertness also. He is listening very attentively to Krishna. In today's two verses, we come across another such quality of Krishna, which is compassion. So yes, he has certain doubts and he is asking them, and we understand because of his exalted position that Krishna chose him to be the recipient of the supreme knowledge of Gita. He can't be in illusion. But then Lord has purposefully put him under illusion so that he asks questions. The mother-in-law sometimes instructs her own daughter, but those instructions are not meant for the daughter. Those instructions are meant for the newly wedded and newly come to their home daughter-in-law. But if the daughter-in-law is directly addressed, is directly instructed, because she has not yet developed the love, she has not yet developed the relations with the mother-in-law, she might get offended. That's why the mother-in-law sometimes chastises or instructs her own daughter, but meant for somebody else. Similarly, Arjun has been put into this position for our benefit, so that we can understand, we can learn about the Lord. Although he is the direct recipient of that knowledge. But here in today's verses, Arjuna is very much satisfied. 9 chapters are over. Out of 18 chapters, half of the knowledge is already over. 9th chapter was the most confidential knowledge. So whatever was the most secret of all secrets has been given. Raja Vidya, Raja Guhyam, it has already been explained. So Arjuna, already he is in an exalted position. Krishna has already told him very nice, detailed knowledge about himself. So now in the 10th chapter, he is asking these questions for benefit of the common people. And the Acharya has explained. Common men, in absence of recognition of Krishna's special position, fail to see him spiritually, fail to recognize his spiritual nature. But what are common men like you and me exposed to? We are exposed to this world. We are exposed to the physical things in this world. So Krishna today is obliged. Krishna today is requested. Keshu keshu cha bhaveshu chintosi bhagavan maya. In what all forms in this material world can we remember you? Can I remember you? Can somebody else remember you? Because for ordinary people, the spiritual world, God, these are faraway concepts. People are already godless. They don't accept the existence of God. What to speak of accepting God as the supreme person? Just conceiving of a person with unlimited energies, of a person who is unlimited in all his aspects, is too much for the common man. So for such people's benefit today, Arjuna is asking this question. He is saying, please tell me in detail, please tell me in detail of your divine opulences by which you pervade all these worlds. Just some time back in text number 7 of the same chapter, Krishna has given him something. He has told him something by which he is inspired to ask these questions. In text number 7 just now, Krishna has said, one who is factually convinced of this opulence and mystic power of mind engages in unalloyed devotional service. Of this there is no doubt. So just now Krishna has told him how, if somebody is really factually convinced, if he has firm conviction in who Krishna is, in what powers he has, of how great he is, then the process of devotional service will start. The devotional service will come later. If I tell you to say, I tell you the president of this country is Mr. X and we should all try to please him. So if somebody here does not know who that Mr. X is, where does he stay, how will he satisfy him? How will he please him? How will he serve him? That's a question that comes later. First, at least you have to know about that person. You have to know who that person is, where he stays and like that. And then there is a question of actually approaching him, actually serving him, actually developing a relationship with him. That comes much later. So the Sammam Bonam, the most desirable thing that is desired, that is recommended, is actually developing a relationship with the Lord. We have relationships with so many people, so many objects in this world. But we just have to repose that tendency to have relationships, to love, in the supreme object of all love, the supreme source of all love, and that is the Lord. But for that to happen, we have to know who He is. So that is why Krishna says that you have to be factually convinced. It's not just theoretical knowledge. And so, taking a cue, taking a hint from that statement of Krishna, Arjun today is asking, please tell me, in what ways can I know you? Yabhir vibhuti bhir lokan. Vibhuti, this word means energies. Like a rich person, say the biggest industrialist in Bombay. What are his energies? His energies is his power of money. With that money, he can control things. He can control people. He can control situations. So that is his energy. He uses his energy in different ways to get things done. For a person who is physically powerful, his vibhuti, his energy, will be his physical strength. For the world's best chess player, his vibhuti is his intelligence. He may not be strong physically, he may not be very rich. So everyone has his energies. But then here, Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So he has the best of all energies to the full. So he says, now you tell me, certainly I accept that you have a spiritual form and you are there in the spiritual world. All that I accept. But since you are the Supreme Lord, since you have multifarious energies, since there is nothing that is hidden from you, there is nothing that is not known to you, there is nothing where you do not exist. So now you tell me, for the benefit of common man, how to his ordinary mundane vision are you perceivable? Like that. So one could understand this. In the 7th chapter, Krishna has said, Maya tatam idam sarvam jagad avyakta murtina matsthani sarva bhutani na teshu chaham avasthita. He says, Maya tatam idam sarvam, I pervade this entire cosmic manifestation, jagad avyakta murtina, in my impersonal form. Not in my personal form. In my personal form, I am in the spiritual world. But in the form of my energies, in the form of my jurisdiction, I was giving this example last time, how there is a police commissioner, how there is a district magistrate, how there is a high court justice, the person. He sits in his office. He has his own residence. He has his own people around him who serve him personally. But under his jurisdiction, the whole city falls. Anything that happens in the city, which is not as per the law, is reported to him. And then he takes charge of that. People whom you see on the streets, people whom you see going by on the streets, they are subject to his jurisdiction. They cannot disobey the laws that are created by the magistrate, that are enforced by different departments like the police department and all. So although he is not personally present, you can't defy him. You can't disobey him. Similarly, the Lord is in the spiritual world, but by his energies, he pervades this world. Idam hi vishwam bhagwan ivetaro. Bhagavatam 5th canto, 1st chapter, 1st canto, 5th chapter. Narad Muni explains this to Vyasadeva, that idam hi vishwam bhagwan ivetaro. Says, this vishwa, this material world is also non-different from the Lord. How? Because he is present here through his energies. Now one way to understand this more, in a better way, consider a tree. From the tree, different branches come. Leaves on those branches come. So the branches
the leaves, the fruits that come on the tree. One could say they are emanation from the tree. They come out of the tree. So tree was there originally, then fresh branches come, then fresh leaves come, fresh fruits come. So in one sense, the branches, the fruits and all, they are later additions. They are emanations from the tree. However, when you talk of a tree, you don't leave out the branches, you don't leave out the leaves. When I'm talking of a tree, if I ask you to draw a picture of a tree, certainly it will not be just the trunk. A complete tree, a usual tree, the usual definition of a tree would necessarily include different branches, different leaves on those branches, different fruits on those branches, some flowers maybe. Yet, they are emanations. So simultaneously, one could say that the leaves, the branches and all such things, they are simultaneously emanations from the tree, yet they are inseparable from the tree. If you take out those leaves and branches, you don't call it a tree, you call them leaves and branches. Yet on the tree, when connected to the tree, they are part of that tree. Another example that is given is the hands and the legs of the body. When considered separately, we call them the hands, the legs, like that. But you know, they grow out of the same body. Initially, when the hands or legs are not there in the fetus, just one mass, but then slowly hands develop, legs develop. So the hands and the legs, they are in one sense inseparable parts of the body, yet they are emanations from the body. So simultaneously, they are one and the same. Similarly, the Lord has His own spiritual abode. The Lord has His own spiritual existence. And this material world has come forth from Him. Yet, when we talk about the entire cosmic manifestation, when we talk about the entire existence, this material world is also counted as part of it. Now, the interesting thing is, just consider, there is a tree and you cut off some leaves and branches from it. How does it look, or what happens to those leaves and branches? They just die off. They wither off. They don't prosper. They don't grow further. Somebody's hands and legs cut off. Gory sight. Looks ghastly. Similarly, this material world, if you take it separate in vision from the Supreme Lord, if you don't consider as an emanation from the Supreme Lord, if you consider it as a separate existence from the Supreme Lord, it just becomes mundane world. It just becomes without any value. It's like a rich man's home. Everything there is very costly. All the statues he has are costly. The pens, sometimes they cost thousands of rupees. Everything in a rich man's home is costly. Yet when it is discarded, when he throws it out, it loses its value. We don't value the dust from a rich man's home, is it? The dust from a rich man's home and the dust from a poor man's home is the same. Because it's dust, it's something that is discarded, it's something that is rejected. Yet that same thing, when it was in the home of that rich man, it had certain value. Similarly, we understand that nothing in this existence has, in one sense, separate existence from the Supreme Lord. Everything is connected to the Supreme Lord. Directly, indirectly. One way or the other, it has to be connected to the Supreme Lord. And when this connection is removed, when we fail to see the divine hand of God in things around us, then just like the hands that are cut off, just like the leaves and the branches that are cut off, they lose their value, they just wither off. Interestingly, the most famous evolutionary biologist, they are celebrating his 200th birth anniversary this year. He did just that. Before him, there was understanding that certain species of life or certain traits, certain characteristics in people, they make them more suited for existence. And some qualities and some characteristics of living beings, because they are not best suited for existence, they wither out, they die like that. But there was presence of the Lord in everyday working of nature. The idea was that the Supreme Lord controls nature, and the nature in turn controls the material world. So how do you get rains? Rains you get by clouds. But who controls the clouds? There's a person in charge. Demigod in control, in charge of those water department, the water department, the piping transportation department. But what this person did is, he just removed that divinity. He just removed the Lord's connection. Any supernatural connection he removed out of it. And he just put the whole emphasis on nature. If you read his book, Origin of Species, he talks about this. He says, some paragraph he writes like this. If you carefully analyze, nature scrutinizes living beings and chooses the best ones. He writes like this. Nature scrutinizes living beings and chooses the best ones. And the ones that are not chosen, the ones that are not selected, because the process is called natural selection, evolution of life by natural selection. That is his theory. Somehow today the most accepted theory that explains life. But he says nature scrutinizes life. Now scrutiny, the act of scrutinizing, the act of inspecting, scrutiny means inspection, selection. It's a conscious act. A machine does not scrutinize. A machine has to be programmed to scrutinize. There has to be life to scrutinize. And even if we accept that nature scrutinizes as a material machine, there has to be a person who has asked it to do so. So it appears contradictory. It's like saying this couch, this Vyasasan, it does something. It can't do anything. The wood on the floor, it can't do anything. It's dead matter. So nature, he is just taking the concept of God, but then removing God out of the picture. He's putting the whole emphasis on nature, material nature. He's saying material nature scrutinizes. How can material nature scrutinize? He himself is saying material nature, but material nature is dead matter. How can it scrutinize? So the concept you cannot remove. But what you can do is, in your anger against God, in your envy against God, you remove him out of the picture and you ascribe. You say somebody else is doing that same task. So saints and sages, they are saying Supreme Lord is in control. Under him everything is happening. And then today's modern scientists say, no, material nature is doing everything. Act does not change because you see things happening in this world. Yet what you can do is, you can just remove the person in charge and you can place the whole thing on some machinery. That's what they are doing. Well, what is the result? The result is godlessness. The result is exploitation of nature. The same planet on which we are living today, we ourselves are harming. How strange. How difficult to understand. It's like we stay in a home and we have 3 or 4 rooms in our home. We clean up